It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, go.
Oh. You go.
Spicy cold Korean food and multigrain Cheerios are sitting on my stomach right
now.
Peanut butter multigrain Cheerios. That being said, I recommend them, just not following cold, spicy Korean food. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that marinates its beef for 8 hours. Other podcasts marinate their beef for 2 or 4 hours, but we believe you can only get the right tenderness and flavor marinating for a full 8 hours. So that's what we do. We care. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 130.
Did you get your hair cut or is your hat just extra tight?
I'm pretty sure that my hair was this short last time I was here.
Okay, I try not to look at your head most of the time. So yep. It's always got a hat on it, so you can't tell.
Yep.
So welcome, everybody, for those of you just starting tonight, and it can happen. There were people that just started on the last episode.
Really?
Yes. Hmm.
That's too bad.
I think they might have stopped on the last episode, too. This is a podcast. Hopefully, if you're listening to this, you know what that is. If not, you're magic. But we also have a hat that's magical. It's magical in that it has its own email address, which it checks periodically for emails that y'all write. Oh, sorry, weird noise in the back. It's a cat. Never mind. Not even Ezzy, I don't think. Anyway, emails that you write to the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Once again, that email address is themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And you write there with questions, comments, concerns, calligraphy. Probably not calligraphy.
No, probably not that.
Anyway, the hat can magically transmogrify these emails all on its own into little note cards with the emails written on them. The short emails, because otherwise they get abridged or digested. And then they magically appear inside the hat, and we draw them out at random, read them, talk about them till we're bored. That's the whole show.
Yeah, we just show up on Thursday night, we grab the hat, and lo and behold, there's stuff in there.
I don't even show up. I live here.
Yeah, well, that's right. You live here. I show up.
Makes sense.
There's just stuff in there, and it happens to be content that people are emailing to the hat.
Yes. We didn't even know at first. We thought the hat was talking to us. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know where
the record button.
All right, yeah.
And we go, and then after we're done recording for an hour, we just put it out there. We don't edit it. We don't see the questions beforehand.
No.
We don't rehearse anything.
And that's why sometimes it gets a little weird, like last episode. had a lot of response.
But even if it gets weird, we post it anyway because... That's how it
is. The interesting thing, in general, the response I got regarding our debate at the end of the last episode,
yeah,
in general, from an argument perspective, most of the people I spoke to agree with me, but in general, they also feel I was the asshole. So it's a weird mix. They think they're on my side, but I was a jerk. And I'm like, thanks and sorry? I don't even know. I do want to take large responsibility for that, though. I was having kind of a weird day, stuff at work. I did the same thing. I was in a very sort of aggressive mood that day. And I would like to apologize. As I pointed out to William, we had a long talk afterwards about the whole thing. And as I pointed out to William, especially for the amount and the quality of conversations we get involved in, the amount of times where it does get a bit intense, I don't know, heated, emotional, dramatic, whatever you want to call it, is really little. Like, I know we've done it half a dozen times on the show, but this is episode 130, so yeah. Think that through.
Yeah.
And that's not counting all the other conversations we have. Like our percentage is so small that I think it really stands out when it happens. So, but it's cool, and we didn't just, you know, say, wow, this is tense, see you next week. We talked a lot afterwards. We didn't record that, because that's just for us. Okay? Some things are just for us. Deal with it.
Not very much.
Not a lot. But it's some right things. Out there. Yeah.
Yes, some things, I suppose.
So, everything is good now. Everything. In the whole world, we fixed it. So,
Mom and Dad still love you.
Yes, Mom and Dad still love you.
It's not your fault.
Mom and Dad still aren't going to tell you which one's Mom and which one's Dad.
It's not your fault when we
have... It's not your fault. We don't love you any less. We're not getting a divorce. We are still living in separate houses, but that's a whole unrelated thing.
Don't worry about that part.
And don't ask where you came from. Not going through that again. Some people at work were talking all about their children and all this, and so I'm just sitting there listening, and after a while there's a momentary pause, and I was like, I have two cats. Anyway, how was your week, William?
Oh, my week, let's see. I don't really have very much to report about it, I guess. I mean, you know, doing my usual thing, but nothing really worthy of discussion.
What about you? Didn't play that game?
What game?
The game I emailed you about.
No, I haven't.
Play that game.
Well, okay. Well, I probably will eventually.
All right, I'm going to talk about it. I got a lot to talk about.
It's probably a long time in coming, though.
A lot of things to talk about.
Okay, go ahead.
The neighbor, Kirk, and his Fab Lab got in the newspaper. I'm going to put the link in there.
Yeah, it did.
So that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And it always feels good. Like, I was confident in all that. But it's nice when the outside world confirms what he's been telling me. You know, just in case he's lost his mind. You know, it's nice that the outside world is like, no, this is totally happening. So that's going to be cool. Like I said, I'll put a thing. The article, as it has been pointed out, is not super well written. But it does have information in it, and it's cool to see it. So check it out. He's also been doing some fundraiser stuff. It's been going really well. So that's moving along nicely. I'm kind of excited to see how this all looks.
I am too.
Saw a movie.
What did you see?
Last night. Saw The World's End. That's the new Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Edgar Wright.
Oh, okay.
The guys who did Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. Right. This is the third one. It's a trilogy. The Blood and Ice Cream trilogy, also known as the Cornetto trilogy.
Okay.
That's what they call it.
I don't know what any of that means, but...
Cornetto is a type of ice cream in the UK that they eat in Shaun of the Dead. And in Hot Fuzz, and it makes an appearance in this.
So, didn't Sean Pegg and...
Simon Pegg.
Yeah, sorry, Simon Pegg. And the other guy, what's his name?
Nick Frost.
Okay, Nick Frost. Didn't they, weren't they both in Paul?
Sean Pegg and Robert Frost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, they were. It was not
that
part of this
count,
trilogy.
Though.
I don't know.
Well, wait. Hold on a second. Wasn't this trilogy? The characters aren't the same from one film to the next. So why is it considered
you
a trilogy?
You could do that.
Well, I know.
Who
but
is
then,
it? The Colors trilogy, blue, white, and red. Those have unrelated
characters.
Yes,
I realize that. So why would Paul be excluded?
I think possibly because...
It takes place in the United States?
Possibly because of that. Possibly Edgar Wright wasn't involved. I don't know. I still haven't seen Paul. Possibly because there was no ice cream in it. I don't know. You'd have to ask them. I didn't come up with this name. This isn't something that the Twitterverse gave them. This is what they say.
All right.
Would you boys like a tomato?
I would not, but they look quite nice.
No, thank you.
That's the producer coming in
with a very good
big Tupperware thing full of tomatoes. Picked from our own garden. I'm assuming you didn't walk to Hy-Vee and just throw those in there.
I've been right in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. She's been stealing them
all
from
over the
neighbors.
Taking them from everyone.
It's a mix.
If you don't pick your tomatoes, then
The whole neighborhood has been growing some good-looking tomatoes then. Anyway, yeah, so saw that.
Okay.
Was good. It's a pretty easy recommend, not recommend kind of thing. If you liked Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, you're going to like this. If you only liked one of those two movies, it's harder to say because I feel like this is really sort of a mix of the two. I personally liked both of the previous movies. I liked Hot Fuzz a lot less than Shaun of the Dead. I adore Shaun of the Dead. and I would say I like this better than Hot Fuzz and not as good as Shaun of the Dead. But I like all three quite a bit. So I would recommend it. Yeah, and I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It was funny. It's crazy. It's got some really well done, like, fight scenes in it, and it's got great lines in it. It's got really good cast. It's not just Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. There's also Martin Freeman and Pierce Brosnan actually shows up in it, and a couple of people who I don't know by name, but they did a really good job in it as well. The guy from Harry Potter. Which guy from Harry Potter? Hermione?
No, guy.
No.
A guy who had a cat.
Yeah, he's old and he like pet it. He was scary.
I don't know. You know so much more about Harry Potter than I do.
The
he doesn't come up.
You know the groundskeeper, what?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. He is in this.
Who I'm talking about.
Yeah, the groundskeeper. Yeah, no, he is actually in this.
I just can't remember the guy's name.
Oh.
Fitch or
something like that. Yeah.
Did you tell the Hatters the news that you told me, and then you said you have to remember to say
it? We're getting married. No, I did not. I will do that now. Now that I'm done talking about The World's End. We have good news. I'm going to look up the email I sent to you about this so that I can quote it exactly.
You sent an email to me about it?
Yes.
When?
This afternoon. We talked about it.
We did?
Yes.
Oh.
Shh. Okay. As soon as I start reading, you'll be like, oh, so okay. Relax.
Okay.
All right, this is an email. Came from Azure Talon today.
Oh.
Fuck you in the face.
I remember.
All right, anyway, that was not part of the email. That was me telling William, fuck you in the face. Anyway, the email says, and I quote, "The cancer is all down to about only 25% left from the last MRI. The drugs worked significantly and I think surprisingly well. The doctor is even very impressed. Not out of the woods 100%, but we are certainly on the right path now and everything will be fine. Now just to keep up the fight and faith and we'll be okay." So everybody, be happy and wish him well. Wish him well on the blog even, because hopefully he's still looking there.
Sure.
TheMagicalTalkingHat.com. Go there. Wish him well. Make fun of him like I do. Yes.
Fighting of his cancer, do you think is due to modern medicine versus listening to this podcast?
Well, we've established this podcast gave him the cancer, so I think, but
wow.
We
so
did.
-100%.
Yeah, no. So I think modern medicine has learned not only how to fight cancer, but to fight our podcast. So good on you, modern medicine. Way to do that.
And you know,
our podcast is a plague that has been sweeping
the
world.
Part of
so.
The upside on that is all of you listeners don't have to worry.
No,
if you start
no.
experiencing any symptoms,
yes,
everything
yes.
will be okay.
I thought you were going to say Azure Talon took it for the team.
No.
Anyway,
everybody else is still in danger.
I do want to say because I find this so hilarious. I made myself laugh. I find some of you wondering sometimes, as I often do, what kind of asshole is Tony? Well, let me tell you what kind of asshole. Tony is the kind of asshole that when his friend sends an email about how the treatment went really well and the cancer is going away and how great that is, and Tony is going to pass this on to his partner, who also likes to know about this stuff, so he sends an email to his partner in which, to make it simpler, he just quotes the email, word for word, just puts it in there as it was. But then, here's where we get to the kind of asshole part. Any place where there's a missing apostrophe or a lack of capitalization where they should be. He puts in sick in brackets.
So that I know, I guess.
Yes, so that his partner that knows.
It wasn't poorly transcribed.
The syntactical and capitalization and punctuation errors are not my fault. They're the dude with cancer. I just wanted you to know that. Yeah. As I was doing it, I was sort of marveling at myself. I was like, seriously? Seriously? I don't know why I did it. But just in case you're wondering, as you're telling, you didn't capitalize the start of two sentences, and you missed the apostrophe in will. Just so you know. I'm such an asshole. It's amazing. Anyway, so now that I've got the fluff stuff out of the way. You know, cancer. I have another thing to talk about. Very important to me. Mm-hmm. I want to tell you guys all about a video game. And before certain chunks of you turn off, stick with me for a minute. This is not a normal video game. This is unlike any video game I've ever played before. The entire game takes about 3 hours. So there's not a lot of commitment here. It is available at Steam. I believe it is available at their own website as well. The game is called Gone Home. Costs about $20.
Now, isn't it more of an interactive novel than a game?
No, that's the thing. There have been so many that fall into that category. This one is really a game.
A game, okay.
Because it is so open.
I see.
You're not just following a path.
I gotcha.
Here's what the game is.
So the way I experience it, it might be different than the way
absolutely,
you experience it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Here's what the game is. You are a college student in 1995. You have just spent a year abroad in Europe. You are coming home, except it's not quite the same home, because while you were gone, your family moved house to a new house, so you've never been there. You come home late at night, shuttle from the airport, big thunderstorm going on, nobody's home. There's a very weird note on the door from your sister, and you don't know where anybody is. And the game is figuring out what the fuck's going on. There is no combat. There are no puzzles. You explore the house in any order you want with whatever level of detail you want. And there are just about everything can be picked up and looked at, which threw me for first because I played so many games that I was picking anything I could pick up. I'm like, oh, what's important? I was checking like every Kleenex box for like hidden messages on the bottom. No, they're just Kleenex boxes. Just you can open every drawer. You can pick up, you know, the eraser you find. It's just an eraser. Like being able to pick up and look at something does not signify it as important. But you find things, you find notes from people, you find reports from school, you find drawings, you find other things, you find magazines, and you slowly piece together why nobody's here, what's been going on over the year you're gone, and even further back stuff. You learn stuff about your family that you didn't necessarily know and things like that. And at whatever pace and in whatever order and direction you want to. And it's really amazing. The story itself, the story that is told, that's the thing. It's a huge sandbox with an actual strong narrative. And I'm not really going to give away how they pull that off. But it's just amazing. They do such a great job of sort of getting you to feel in the moment. There's very little of what they call ludonarrative dissonance, where like you get taken out of it realizing you're sort of in a game. There's very little of that. And it's really just open exploration, and yet the story's there. And the story is quite impressive, but I'm more... It's a great story. I love the story. But I'm more fascinated by this as a piece of craftsmanship. I feel like this is a brand new kind of video game. And it's amazing, and the potential, especially for storytellers, is unbelievable. And so I highly recommend everybody give this a try. And again, it's like 3 hours of your life. You don't have to play it all at once. You can save it. I played it in a couple of sessions. I feel like you get a little taken out of it if you stop for a while. So if you can, take an evening and just play the whole thing through. But it's not necessary. I played it over a couple of different nights. It was very scary to me for no good reason. Because it's a thunderstorm and it's a house and most of the lights are off and stuff, and it's just the unknown. So, like, I open a door and the room is dark and I'm like, shit, I gotta get in there and find a light switch fast. Like, for no reason. And I know there's no combat in the game. I was already, like, I know, like, nothing going to attack me or whatever. It just was creepy. I'm in a room with headphones on listening to this in the living room of my in-laws. There are six other people in there talking and watching TV, something like Animal Planet or something on the TV, and I can even hear that a little bit. I'm still tense and freaked out. Like, and the lights are all on. No, I'm just, oh, it was amazing. And yeah, and you, more than almost anybody, I really want you to play it. I think you're really going to want the rest of your household to play it as well.
Okay.
And I will say this to you, but also to the listeners, in case they're like that. If you're some of those people that with a game, obviously the gameplay here isn't the exciting part. It's not lots of kung fu and shit like that. And so sometimes people like to play sort of together. One person will watch, another person will. I don't recommend that with this game. I feel like it's a very personal sort of thing, and I feel like it works better. I imagine two people playing and, like, talking about what's going on, and that feels weird to me.
Okay.
I feel it's better appreciated individually. So check it out. Gone Home. You can get it off of Steam, which is at steampowered.com, or I think their website is, like, Gone Home Game, or maybe just gonehome.com. I don't know. If you Google it, it should come up. It's kind of a big deal right now. It's getting a lot of press. But it's amazing. And for those of you who are into that sort of thing, it was made by a company of four people. And most of those people came from working on Bioshock 2, in particular the DLC for that, Minerva's Den. These are the people who made it. It's just a four-person company. And it's awesome.
Okay.
So, yeah. Check that out. And you haven't played it yet. You should do it. Play it.
I imagine I will eventually.
Do it.
I
need people to play this because I can't. I don't have anybody to talk to about this game.
Well, you can't talk
really
to me about it because
talk to
you. The only time you talk to me about things is when I come here, and you're not going to talk about it on the air.
I would totally. If you had played it this week, we would totally talk about it after we were done recording. Oh. We would totally talk about it. I want to talk about this game.
Okay. Well.
Very sad. You've disappointed me once more. Get out. All right. The producer and her sister have started watching a new TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix original series Hemlock Grove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard of that.
It's awful.
Is it?
So bad.
Oh, wow.
And that's why they're watching it, basically, because it's just so... It's really hilariously terrible. And so they're watching it and just, like, laughing about it.
That's too bad, because it's a werewolf thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a supernatural thing as a whole. It's a horror, supernatural horror kind of thing overall. Yes, there is a werewolf character involved. There's also other kinds of characters, I believe. I think they were trying to sort of capitalize on a supernatural romance kind of thing, because there's lots of young, pretty people who happen to be these things.
Why do you think that... there's so much more in fiction with vampires than there is with, say, werewolves.
Well, I don't know. I think I've discussed on here, I don't like werewolves myself.
Yeah, maybe we have talked about this.
Werewolves, yeah, I don't like werewolves.
Well, maybe
I do tend to like vampires.
Maybe if there were as much werewolf stuff out there as there is vampire stuff out there, there might be a werewolf story
you'd
actually like.
It's possible, because that's the thing. Because of the oversaturation of vampire stuff, we have a lot of different kinds.
Yeah.
While we do have some different kinds of werewolf, it's not nearly as broad as it is with vampires. So that is a good point. I don't know. That's an interesting question. If somebody had written it in, we'd talk about it, but they didn't, so we can't.
Okay.
No, if you've got some theories, though, go to the blog and tell us. I don't know that.
I actually have met some people who would like there to be more really good, you know, werewolf-based stories. But you know, the few that's out there, they don't really like Teen Wolf or Werewolf in London. I mean, the stuff that's been made that everybody goes back to, they don't like those in particular. And they have
the Howling series, including Howling for the Marsupials.
They have friends who are into vampires, and they seem to have all kinds of choices.
Yep.
If they don't like this vampire story, there's this other vampire story. So, you know, it's kind of, they kind of wish that more people were making them, because then if they don't like one, well, okay, that's no big deal, because there's this other one that they do like.
I have two theories. One is probably correct. I don't know which one, though. The first theory I had is I feel like, vampire popularity largely historically has been based on the fact that vampires are about two things, sex and death, and the two are sort of interchangeable. They're not explicitly generally about sex, but metaphorically there's a lot of stuff tied up in vampires that's tied up in sexual issues. There's a lot of allegorical shit going on there. And of course they're totally about death in a very literal sense.
Well, the sexual angle goes back to the very earliest novels written about vampires.
And so I think that's popular. Werewolves don't have that quite the same. Hmm. Werewolves tend to be control issues and then in later versions sort of a naturalistic issue. But I think less directly about sex and less directly about the sort of taboo stuff, because frequently with vampires it's something that you become or you succumb to, whereas with werewolves it's frequently you're either born to it or you just were attacked in the night and that sucked.
Well, also, most of the stories, it's just something that's going to be a problem once a month.
Night
a month, and then the rest of the time it doesn't.
Vampirism, there's aspects of corruption and things like that. There's a lot of deep psychological shit there that I think makes it very popular. So that could be it.
The thing, though, about that, everything you said, is someone writing a novel or a screenplay or whatever could find ways to make the werewolf myth as compelling if they wanted to.
Yes.
I mean, the thing is that, like, all of those psychological things you brought up really came to the vampire myth by way of novels.
Yes.
It's not like the original vampire myth had all of that stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, everything you're saying is probably true, but it just pushes the question down the road a little bit further to ask, why has no one ever told a werewolf story with some of that stuff added in a way that would be compelling to people and cause a response the same way we respond to
vampires? Well, which sort of steps into my second theory, which is I think there were key seminal works for vampires that just aren't there for... This explains the breadth of vampirism out there. Is Bram Stoker, first and foremost, and then later... Well, and Rice.
And a few people he borrowed from.
His is kind of a ripoff of...
like Carmilla, you know.
And the guy who did Vampire or whatever. Yeah. No, but that... no, and I'm not crediting him with craft. I'm just saying his text blew up, culturally speaking.
Right.
And for so long. And then it, at a certain point, Anne Rice does her thing... Mm-hmm. And it really blows up.
Yeah.
And so it's possible, it's essentially a domino effect and time. And werewolves haven't had that domino. Where's the great werewolf novel?
Well, you're right. I mean, while there are...
And at a certain point it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle.
Right. There are a lot of stories out there, but as you're saying, that sort of feedback loop that started with the whole vampire thing... You know, back in the 19th century, even it just that kind of thing hasn't really ignited for the werewolves.
Yeah, if there was a werewolf novel that sat today in the literature section of bookstores, it's possible we would have as much of a breadth of werewolf stuff. Again, this is my second theory, and again, I pulled both of these out of my butt.
Just historical right accident, now. Really, is what you're saying.
Basically, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, there are so many other options, too. I mean, vampires, yeah, they... I mean, mummies don't have that same sort of thing.
That's true.
I'd say things like ghosts and demons sort of do, but that's just such a broader category.
But see, then you have something a little more recent, like zombies, and they're just going crazy, you know, in terms of popular culture, video games, and everything. So this, here you have a sort of a late arrival. They don't have some great novel or anything.
No, you know what they have?
No.
1968, George Romero, Night of the Living Dead.
So they have a classic, kind of classic cult classic
and
movie.
And they also have, in this time of more interactive media, they are, and in this time of more moral ambiguity, they're the Nazis now. You can use zombies, and you can do whatever the fuck you want to zombies, and you're not a bad guy. Zombies are Nazis nowadays, because basically, the zombies are always bad. There's no question, oh my god, do I kill the zombie? Except, you know, some people are getting postmodern, and it becomes a thing. But in general, nobody's going to be mad if you make a movie where the protagonists are really mean to zombies.
That's
you know, because they're zombies.
That's true.
But I feel like without Romero's original Night of the Living Dead, it might not have happened. But it's a similar thing. The zombie craze has really been more recent. It has recently become just a huge thing again. And that might be a video game thing. I don't really know. I don't know where that comes from. I really am not into zombies. So I don't know what the fuck.
I'm not either.
That being said, I really love Shaun of the Dead, but that's not about the zombies. The zombies are always a prop. The zombies are always a MacGuffin. And so me liking the movie or the book or whatever has nothing to do with that. If you'd like to learn more about zombies or MacGuffins, type either of those into iTunes. You'll probably get a bunch of podcasts. But remember, they don't marinate their beef for as long. Keep that in mind. I wish you guys could see the sort of hollow, disenchanted look William gets on his face every time I mention the beef marinating thing.
I don't even know what to say.
It's like the angst of the great vegetarian right here. He's like, oh god.
He looks.
I'll tell you what he looks like.
Know what it means.
The look on his face is kind of similar to when a politician is involved in some terrible sex scandal and makes an apology statement, and his wife is standing next to him there. His face kind of looks like the wife's face when I say that.
Yeah, that's probably accurate.
Yeah, so he's standing by me, but he's not going to pretend it didn't happen. You know,
it doesn't have an effect on
Yes, he wishes it didn't happen, but that's not going to tear our family apart.
He just doesn't know what to do standing there.
Marinated beef. I'm distracted. I went to a Korean place last night. It's really good. I liked it a lot. I feel like nowadays when I go to new restaurants, very seldom do I get to say I really liked it. I usually get to say, oh, it was okay.
Yeah.
I really like this place. Mm. I'm sure they have some vegetarian stuff, because it's Korean is their flagship thing, but they've got Chinese, Japanese, all that jazz. The place is actually just called Korean Barbecue. That's the name of the restaurant. Mm. And they do actually have a Korean barbecue section where you can, like, grill your own stuff. Didn't do that. It's where Aoshi was, and then later Yenching. Now it's called Korean Barbecue. It's quite possible it's owned by the same people. I can't tell. Wow. That sounded more racist than I meant it. I mean, I was never familiar with the owners of any of these places. And the general atmosphere and furnishing has not changed a lot. And in general, the menu is even similar. So I can't really tell if it's a rebranding by the same people. I did not mean to imply that all owners of that restaurant look alike. If that's what you thought I implied, that's on you. You should take a hard look inside you, buddy. What are you about? Maybe just pause the podcast there and go think about that for a little while. Think. So, hat?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's go ahead and do the hat.
Don't forget to mix up all the exciting emails so that you can draw truly randomly.
Truly randomly.
What'd you get?
Kia B.
Kia B. Our favorite Kia.
Dear the Magical...
she still listens. We haven't heard from her in a while on the blog.
Yeah, I don't know.
Kia, if you're out there, tell us right now.
Dear the Magical Talking
Hat. Oh, I hear her.
What is the best TV sitcom theme song?
Ooh, Gary Shandling Show.
This is a theme to Gary Show. A theme to Gary Show.
I really think that's
Gary
it.
Gary asked me if I should write his theme song. I've never even watched that show, no. But I know the song because it was so famous.
We can talk about this. I'm happy to talk about this, but I really do think that's the best one.
I'm almost halfway finished. How do you like it so far?
The one to Malcolm in the Middle was good. I mean, they might be Giants, so I might be cheating, but...
I don't... They Might Be Giants was the song.
They Might Be Giants did a song. I don't know which came first, but their performance of their song was the theme for Malcolm in the Middle. There's a song called, it may have been called Life is Unfair. I'm not sure.
I don't think I've heard it.
It's quite good.
I think a lot of people remember the Cheers theme song pretty, you know, in terms of memorable songs.
Yes, yes.
And Greatest American Hero.
That's a contender.
A lot of people remember that.
That is a contender. I like that song. In fact, I think that song actually was on the Billboard, like hits. I think that was on the radio for a while.
The Family Ties song. A lot of people remember that one.
People also remember the Growing Pains song. That song sucked.
I don't know that one.
Show me that smile again. Don't waste another.
Didn't Who's the Boss have a theme song too?
Yes. That wasn't it. I'm not doing the song.
Did Alf have a theme song? I don't remember that either.
I feel like not.
The cartoon did. It was actually pretty good. The
cartoon was weirdly ahead of its time.
Well, the cartoon theme song was really good, and the cartoon theme song for Mighty Mouse was really good too. But
only when Andy Kaufman did it.
We're not talking.
And it's sitcom because I'm like, the various themes for Mystery Science Theater were kind of awesome. But those aren't really sitcoms.
You like, what was the one with Balky and all that stuff? You
Perfect
like,
Strangers?
You like the Perfect Strangers one.
Sometimes the world looks perfect. Nothing to rearrange. That is a good one. That is a really good one. In fact, go to nothingsgonnastopmenow.com and play the game and hear the song right now. Balky will help you follow your dreams.
The Mary Tyler Moore song was very popular.
Yeah. Laverne Shirley?
Oh, yeah.
Good one. Good one there. Happy Days, of course, but, you know, fuck that.
The best one, though. I don't know. I mean, you know, I haven't watched sitcoms really for years. I mean, since I left home in 1987.
Well, I don't think they really have lyrics anymore now. Yeah, so a lot much.
Of, that's true.
Well,
like, you know, Married with Children had...
Love and Married.
But that, I don't know.
If you like Sinatra, fine. I'm not going to officially say I dislike Sinatra on the air, because I feel like there are still people after his death that are in his employ to hunt down people who say they don't like him and kill them, so I'm not going
to
do it.
Although, you know, it is asking what is the best TV sitcom theme song. It doesn't necessarily have to have lyrics.
No, I mean, but there's not a lot of great...
Well, the Simpsons music before their show is pretty iconic.
It is, but is it good? I mean... Is it iconic? Growing Pains is iconic. Fucking hate that song.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
Oh.
That's a good one.
Oh.
That's a good one.
That is a very good one. Well. Okay.
Beverly Hillbillies. Jet Clamp. That's a good one, too.
Odd Couple.
Yeah, that's a good one. But so is the Hogan's Heroes, the march that plays before Hogan's Heroes.
Doogie Howser. Did you ever see?
I never watched it, but
But did you ever see the SNL bit?
No.
There was an SNL bit they did where he comes out, like, it was one of their digital ones, so it wasn't during the show. It's like dark stage, and there's a keyboard with spotlight on it. And he walks out, sits down, and starts playing it, because it's all, like, bullshit synthesizer stuff. And then strings kick in, and then woodwinds kick in, and a whole orchestra starts playing this elaborate theme to it, and people dressed as Doogie Howser, so like the scrubs and the tennis shoes, high tops with no laces in them, and the lab coat, come out and start dancing. There's like this elaborate choreography and this whole thing, and then it eventually ends with him finishing out the song on the keyboard, and he looks up, and one tear is rolling down his cheek, and that was the whole bit. It was awesome. I've discovered, here's the thing, here is a weird thing, here is the reason people listen to this show, right here.
Okay.
Is for weird shit like this that you will not get anywhere else. I have discovered over the years two of the most common songs that will get stuck in my head are the theme to Doogie Howser and the theme to The Odd Couple. I did not know why for years. I only just recently have, I'm not even going to say figured out, I believe this is the highly most likely theory why it is. Those songs fit my walking pace. That's what happens, is I'm walking along and I find myself singing those in my head. And I think it's because the pace and tempo of those songs matches with how I tend to walk. Isn't that weird?
I think that's probably true for a lot of people.
Those songs are just songs. There's probably some song that tends to do that.
The rhythm of their walking or some other aspect of their life corresponds to a particular piece of music or several that they know, and it just pops into their head, and that's why.
Because I was always, I was like, why does this, like the Odd Couple theme gets in my head all the time. And then I was like, and the Doogie Howser theme, that's not right. Why is that happening? And I finally was like, I think it's just the pacing. By the way,
is MASH a sitcom?
MASH? Oh, fuck yeah. I mean, it's also a movie, but then it's a sitcom, yeah. Mm. Yeah, so Suicide is Painless is not bad.
Yeah.
The original opening for Designing Women, that was a brass instrumental version of Georgia on My Mind, was good. Years later, they did a really slowed down one that Ray Charles himself actually did, and I wasn't that into that one. Oh my god, but we're not thinking clearly.
Really?
Yes.
That's a first.
Cosby Show.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Every season was a new song.
Well, was it a new song or like a new style of
same song? No, they were very different in a lot of cases.
But are you sure? Because it seems like it was they did the same song, but they did it in a different style.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Mm. I'm not willing to swear to it, but I don't think so. And I know
bum,
one
bum,
year...
Bum, bum, bum. That, you mean?
That was the first one, yeah.
Well, but like subsequent seasons did it in a different style or something.
I don't think so. I'm thinking of the other songs. And unless I'm really, like, just missing the right downbeat, it's not there.
Well, of course, I don't remember anything, so you're probably...
And one year was... Actually, I do take it back. I'm fairly confident the first season one, which was the one you were doing, and the Bobby McFerrin one, which I want to say was, like, season five or whatever, those are pretty close. Those might be variants of the same tune. But, like, the Oregon Symphony, very few people read the Oregon Symphony did one year. Hmm. They know this is a symphony orchestra one, but it was actually the Oregon Symphony. I feel like that one's different. There was a interesting sort of jazzy one in one of the later seasons. There were a lot of very interesting ones there. I like those.
We're not really answering the question, though, because we're not picking a best.
Gary Shandling Show. Did you ever see a sitcom called Swing on a... No, it was called Out of This World, I believe. It had a version of Would You Like to Swing on a Star. It was the first place I ever heard that song. It was only years later I found out it was like a real song.
What's that sitcom that... you were talking about The Odd Couple.
Give me a premise, I can get there.
In the Odd Couple, the two guys were in it, the television was... Who was it?
Jack Klugman and Tony Randall.
Tony Randall was later in a sitcom where he played a guy who had a young woman and her daughter was living with him, and I think there had been some kind of Broadway show or something that it was based on, and he was gay, and you don't know what I'm talking
about? No, not in the slightest.
They had a theme song, something like "We'll Stick Together" or something.
Oh. It wasn't a bit about cousins, identical cousins.
No. Oh, why can't I remember what it was called?
Tony Randall, and he was gay. It was a sitcom where they admitted he was gay.
Well, they didn't make a big deal out of it, I don't think.
How, what, is this 70s?
No, 80s, I think.
80s, okay.
I mean, his name was in the title.
Tony Randall?
Regarding...
Tony?
No, regarding... No, the Henry? Character's name. Not regarding, maybe. Maybe it was something else. Yeah, Tony Randall.
I don't remember this at all.
But it was based on something else, like a play.
Springtime for Hitler?
No.
Springtime.
But anyway, it had a pretty distinctive theme song.
In Germany.
But,
That is a song that can easily
Silver
get stuck in your head.
Silver Spoons had a
better.
Pretty distinctive theme song. Best of the West had
Here
a cool
we
theme
are,
song.
Face to face, couple of silver spoons.
Let's see. Well, I'm sure someone knows this Tony Randall. And this
yeah,
is,
tell us. Go to the blog
the
and tell us.
This is where I give up, I guess.
And then give
Cause
up.
Because I'll probably, maybe I'll remember later on in the evening or something.
Well,
or maybe
then you go to the blog and tell us. Because I want to know now. I'm fascinated.
Never heard of this one.
No. I remember Tony Randall from Odd Couple.
Mm-hmm.
A few commercials. PSAs for tinnitus. And who was the late night host that he would always... step in for it. Was it Conan? Somebody that if their guest canceled, they'd always get Tony Randall.
I think he was in a movie with Rock Hudson and Doris Day. But I don't remember that either for sure. I just don't remember things very good. You know that. Sorry, everybody.
And then there's somebody will do it. I mean, we could look it up right now, but I feel like
I feel like
the dramatic tension.
I know we started doing that,
better.
And it seemed
yeah,
to be
no,
wrong.
It
seemed to be wrong.
It lost its mystique.
Yeah, let's
somehow.
Not let's not do that.
How about Fresh Prince of Bel Air? That was a good song. Ooh, or Different World.
Yeah, Different World.
It's a different world. Where you come from? Oh. What about Frasier?
Yeah.
Baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. And you take the good, you take the bad. You take them both.
Take them.
I assume the theme to Webster had lyrics. I don't remember the theme to Webster.
Different Strokes did.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Jefferson's?
Good Times.
What's the theme to Good Times? I gotta be honest. Good Times is a little before my times. I probably have seen like one episode in syndication, but.
Well, I mean, you know.
Jefferson's
actually, Jack Black sings it in School of Rock for a
Does
little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good Times.
Moving on up to the east side.
Jefferson's. Well, and All in the Family, they sing at the beginning of each show.
Oh. That might beat out Gary Sheridan. No, seriously, there is something so endearing about that moment.
Well, yeah, I've never known
with
any
the
other
visual
show.
And everything, just to see them like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I've never known any other show to do it.
Family Guy parodied it, basically. Their intro is kind of a parody
Every
of it.
Every show
but,
they sit down and play that song, and it's pretty cool.
And it gives so much weight to the show because... You have to buy their marriage for that show to work.
Yeah.
And if you see that opening, you do. Like,
yeah,
right
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And the whole rest of the particular episode, you may... If you don't see that part, you may just be like, why the fuck are they together? But to see that, you kind of get it.
Yeah.
That might win. Oh, that's a good one.
That is a good one.
All in the Family. It's been parodied so many damn times. Including like four times by The Simpsons, I think. Alright, there you go, Kia. Either On the Family or Gary Shandling Show. Okay, we got to hurry on another one, but we can do it. Oh, it's me, that's right. I forget, it's my turn!
Your turn.
Wheel of Morality, turn, turn, turn. Show us the lesson that we must learn. Moral number 5. Oh, Jesus Christ.
How ironic.
This is from Mark McKibben. A hard hat number 1. He is so proud of that title, by the way.
Well, he should.
Not only does he always introduce himself that way to people who might know the podcast, one time he introduced himself to me that way on the phone. he really likes that title.
Well earned.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Assuming that the podcast is truly powered by humanity's belief in toast, doesn't matter what kind of toast it is, e.g., do you get more power if it's rye toast? What about toasted bagels? Mark McKibben. First of all, we don't know what you're talking about. In case you've figured out, this podcast is the only podcast that marinates its beef for 8 hours. I don't know of a podcast that is powered entirely by belief in toast. If I did, that would be in some sort of completely different episode where that was our gimmick for that one. So what the hell are you talking about? But assuming that's not the case, what do you think?
Well, to begin with, toast, we need to take that to mean what most people think of when they hear the word toast, and it's referring to food. It's toasted bread. It can't be toasted anything else. I mean, anything could be toasted. Like a bagel.
That is true. Or a piece of fabric could be toasted, technically.
But
or a lovely submarine sandwich.
Toast is specifically sliced bread. However, you're correct. You can slice and toast many kinds of bread. And is there a difference in the power potential depending on the kind of bread you're using? To my knowledge, well, we just don't even know that. I presume, however, that toast is toast, and it doesn't really matter.
I do find it interesting, though. What? How do you decide when it is appropriate to use the word toasted? Like, you can toast bread, you can toast a marshmallow. We've established you can toast a bagel, but you can't toast a steak. You can do essentially the exact same thing that you would do toasting something to a steak, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't call it toasted. You'd call it most likely grilled, possibly charred, blackened. How does something determine if it can be toasted?
I do not know.
You can't toast vegetables. You frequently roast vegetables.
Well, usually when I hear about something being toasted, it's something that can be browned in a way that does not require like grilling or whatever. I mean, you apply heat.
Yes.
But you're applying the heat in a very specific way, I think, don't you think? I mean, it's not like you don't. Well, I don't know. A lot of people would say grilled cheese is toasted, and a lot of people make that on a grill.
Some people say toasted cheese sandwich.
Yeah, skillet.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. For the moment, let's do this. We're going to use the broiler in the oven.
Okay.
We put a piece of bread under that.
Yeah.
Toasted.
Mm-hmm.
If we put a bagel under that, toasted.
Mm-hmm.
If we put a marshmallow under there, assuming it browns,
mm-hmm.
toasted.
Mm-hmm.
If we put vegetables under there,
no, we wouldn't call it
roasted, probably, right? Maybe baked, maybe broiled. But we wouldn't ever say broiled bread or broiled marshmallows.
Maybe the marshmallow is causing the trouble here because, You know, for just about all those other things you mentioned, there's
bread.
Yeah, well, not just that, but there's an aspect of it that it's not just brown, but it dries a little bit. You know, it becomes crunchier.
Yeah.
And the marshmallow doesn't; it just gets browner.
But okay, potato.
Did they say toasted potato?
No, but essentially that's what happens.
Well,
there.
Maybe what toasted means is something that you heat, and in the process of heating, you let it brown and dry and crisp up a little bit. And this process is mostly going to apply to, you know, breads or pastries or whatever. And the marshmallow the term is probably somewhat improperly applied.
Rode on bread's coattails.
Yeah.
But again, potato.
But it doesn't really dry out or crisp up, really.
Depending on how you've sliced it, it might.
Oh, I see.
Roasted potatoes often are drier and browned.
Yeah, and it's like you put oil
hash brown
on the skins or something. Sometimes yeah. It can nice and crispy.
And honestly, thinly sliced meat in that circumstance can get there. Mm. Help bacon. This is weird. I'm going to have a lot of existential crises over this now. I don't know. But I have an answer for Mark's question. Who the hell believes in only rye toast, but doesn't believe in any other kind of toast? Or believes in toasted bagels, but doesn't believe in toasted bread? That's crazy talk. You find me people who only believe in specific... If you believe in toast, you believe in the whole gamut of toasts. Products. So you find me somebody who only believes in one kind of toast. And I don't mean believes in it, like, throws their support behind it.
Okay, but...
Existentially.
Well, but it's not that these people believe in only one kind of toast. It's that they believe in this kind of toast more than this other kind of toast.
See, I still think that's not a thing.
Really?
Nobody, I believe that people believe this toast is tastier, but I don't think that people are like, I know rye toast is a real thing. I'm only pretty sure wheat berry toast is a real thing.
Well, but it's more like, okay, so I'm eating rye toast, for example, and someone else says, well, I'm eating white toast. Well, white toast? White bread barely qualifies as bread. You're not really eating toast. You're eating, like, some dried, sick, glutinous mass. This is real toast here, rye toast. You see what I'm trying to say? It's not so much an issue of belief as an issue of passion. And
to the degree that you defy the very existence.
Yeah. Almost.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I hope those people don't power our podcast, because those people are assholes. Well. You should have whatever kind of toast you want.
Well, I think what he's getting at is that there might actually be an objective way to say this is actually a better quality of toast than
better,
this over here.
Better
is.
Better quality of toast is not the same thing as less being of toast. It can be shitty toast and still be absolutely toast.
So what you're saying is it's a completely ontological thing. If it exists as toast, that's all. It doesn't matter if
yes,
it's
yes,
rye.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. No, this is not belief in the goodness of toast. This is not belief in the ability of toast to make us a brighter future for all. This is not even a belief that toast is a balanced part of this breakfast. This is a belief that toast exists.
At all. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't think you can believe one kind of toast exists. And
well, no, you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right.
You did make me wonder for a second, though. Let me go. And I'm still just overwrought and sort of verklempt with this whole what counts as toasted thing. I don't know what I'm going to do with that. I'm not going to sleep well tonight.
Well,
it's not just because of the Korean food and
the good news.
Cheerios.
The good news for the podcast, though,
is that we're almost done.
Insofar as it exists on the power of belief in toast,
which we've established it doesn't.
Whether or not you can define what being toasted means, there is some pretty strong consensus about, say, a slice of bread and whether or not you can toast it, what that means.
Yes.
So we don't have to worry
We're
about
safe.
The podcast.
Yes.
We just have to worry about your so, state of mind and sanity and whatnot.
If you'd like to learn more about toast, I feel sad for you.
Well, thank you, Mark McKibben and Kia B.
Yes, and tune in next week when we will fight a bear. No. No. Anyway, yeah, write the hat. Please write the hat. That's how we keep going, is with the emails to the hat. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. You don't have to sign it if you want it to be anonymous. That's fine. There's no signature on the bottom. It's anonymous. It's fine. No one will know except the hat.
Well, I mean, I can understand someone not wanting to sign their name. I mean,
yeah, which is fine. And it'll be anonymous. It's all good. Also, go to the blog and talk to us and to all of the fellow hatters and hatlings, haberdashers, hard hats. All of our different demographics. We have a very strict hierarchical system. No, we don't. Because really, how do you segregate 7 people? Go there, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Check it out. And have fun with that. And we will see you next week once we have a bear.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.